And do you think we tell them?
Should we tell them?
We could tell them.
Well, I feel like we have to tell them now.
Today, this is a special episode because today is Valentine's Day.
It is Valentine's Day.
And we're going to be covering some love god and goddesses. So grab your chair, guys, and come on in to the Ominous Archives. I guess I'll start.
I think you start.
You know? All right. I'm just going to say it right off the bat. I'm going to do my best with pronunciations.
Mm-hmm. Anyway. Bear with us, please.
Yeah. So today, I'm going to start with Hathor. She was one of the 42 state gods and goddesses of Egypt. They began worshiping her in the early dynastic time, which is like the third millennium BCE.
It's crazy.
Yeah. We're like way back there.
We don't even have years.
Yeah. And it says her, if you hear the squeaking, now that we've been interrupted, it's Archie.
It's Archie playing with his patron.
Yeah. His paltron. It's not patron. It's paltron.
His paltron.
He's still young. Anyway. So it says her center of worship was Dendria. So I guess they have, I want to say temples. She was one of the most popular and powerful goddesses.
Love.
Yeah. I thought that was pretty cool. When they
popular.
Said that. I'm not even going to get into it. Nope. You're not going to get me to bite. But she wasn't just like a love goddess. She was also a goddess of beauty, music, dancing, fertility, and pleasure.
Goddess of dancing. I love that.
Right?
This diva.
I know. Was also the protector of women.
I really love her.
Yeah, right? So she had priests as well as priestesses at her temples. She was the wife of Horus. She was also associated with the mother of the pharaoh in her role as Horus's nurse. Her main animal form was a cow, which was strongly associated with her motherhood. Not exactly. It didn't explain how that correlates. She was also the daughter of Ra and was sometimes called the Eye of Ra in her role as the sun god's defender. She was also, like with being the goddess of beauty, she was also the patron of cosmetics. Yeah. Wearing cosmetics was seen form of worship to Hathor, and offerings of mirrors or cosmetic palettes were common for her, which is kind of cool. Instead of like food and everything, they would leave palettes, which is also really cool. The fact that it was like dates all the way back to there,
right.
You know, like way back. Obviously, I don't know anything about makeup, but knowing that it dates that far back is pretty cool.
Doesn't shock me. The girlies always knew what they were on to.
Yeah, I definitely don't. So every year, her statue was carried in a boat to Edfu. Idfu?
Sure.
Yeah. To be reunited with Horus. She was also called the Lady of Triposi in Sani Trikois. Yeah. Yep. That's where our names start going all over the place. Along with Necropolis. I think I got that one right.
I was going to say, that one sounded right.
That one sounded good, didn't it?
It did.
Not so much. That one? Yeah. She was also called, like I said, Triposi from the Sani of Turquoise, and then Necropolis of Thebes at Dei al-Rawa. And then she also became the Lady of the West and Patroness of the Region of the Dead. And it said that women worshipping her and everything, they would end up aspiring to be assimilated with Hathor in the next world. And kind of like for some comparison, Hathor kind of compares to the Greek goddess Aphrodite.
Hmm.
That's kind of the basic, super basic gist of Hathor. And I think I'm going to turn it over to you, Em.
Coming over to me.
North.
Coming to me.
Going to you.
First one I have on my list here is Miss Freya. Freya was most renowned of the Norse goddesses, who was the sister and female counterpart of Freyr and was in charge of love, fertility, battle, and death.
Which is definitely fitting for like a Nordic goddess.
For sure.
Definitely.
Some like main just like blanket characteristics. When you think of Freya, you think of the chariot that was almost always like shown to be pulled by two cats. I just love that. I feel like that's just so girl boss. If I'm going to be pulled around by anything, let it be some two cool cats. I love it. She also would ride a boar that, please stay with me here, was named Hildisvini. That was her boar's name. So when she wasn't being pulled by her chariot of two cats, she was riding her boar named Hildisvini.
What was I going to say? It's very Viking.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Another characteristic, she was always wearing a cloak made of falcon feathers. Freya owns the necklace, bear with me, Brigandsimmen, which symbolizes fertility, which is where the goddess of fertility comes from the necklace. She also uses a staff to predict the future.
That's cool.
So sick.
Yeah.
So sick. I read that. I was like, I didn't know about that little tidbit.
I
knew about the cats.
You knew about the cats.
I knew about the cats.
Well, you have cats.
I do.
It's like a cat thing.
Mm-hmm. I have a friend whose cat's name is Freya, literally.
Ah, there it is.
Mm-hmm.
No, I just, the whole Nordic Viking.
Yeah.
Like, I'm telling you, I watched the show Vikings and then I was like, dude, this is like wild.
Sick.
I mean, the show does its own thing watching it. It just intrigues you into that that whole religion.
Freya has sacred meadows that were called Folkvang, where half of the warriors who die in battle would go to. So those were her sacred meadows. Her father was Njord, who is a sea god. Her husband is not even going to pretend. O-A-R? So I want to say or, but like that's, I know that's not how it's pronounced. It's got like the fancy letters, you know. So I'm so sorry to her husband, but, and I know that's not the pronunciation. They have two daughters named Hnoss and Gersemi. Freya was widely worshipped in the Viking Age. People often offered Freya essential oils like sandalwood, birch, and rose, as well as her favorite foods like pork, honey, and apples. And people also paid homage to Freya by treating cats well. I love it. I love it. It was Freya's privilege to choose one half of the heroes that were slain in battle for her great hall in the Folkvagnr, which, insane. She possessed a famous necklace, which I talked about, which the trickster god Loki stole from her.
Damn it, Loki.
Right? How dare you? And the god's watchman recovered. So she got it back, but it was stolen. Freya was also credited with the evil act of teaching witchcraft to the Aesir. He was a tribe of the gods, like the Egyptian goddess Isis and the Greek Aphrodite. Freya traveled through the world seeking a lost husband and weeping tears of gold. It also might surprise people to know that the name Freya is not actually her name. It's a title. Like, that just means lady.
Really?
And, like, Friar means lord. Friar. So-
Does she have a name, or is she just woman?
She has a few nicknames. Mardal, Horn, Geffen, and Sire became like her top four nicknames that she was known for because nobody actually ever knew her real name.
Wow.
The earliest form of the title, like Freya or Lady, would have been something like way, way before her time. Like that wasn't even like the first time like Freya has been used as a title. It's just the one that she got stuck with and it stuck with her. So
it works.
Yeah. Right. It's pretty. I kind of like it, but it literally just translates to lady. That's Miss Freya.
Yeah. I had no idea.
The staff is sick.
Oh, the staff is definitely sick.
It can predict the future.
Yeah.
And a cloak made of falcon feathers that was like so specific that everything you look up, they talk about this falcon feather. Yep.
Pretty thorough. An invisibility cloak, though.
Pretty. All right. Nothing's as cool as an invisibility cloak.
No.
It's just in a simple world.
simple world.
We don't have them. Shooting back to you.
Yeah, coming back over here. Now, I'm going to dive into the Roman goddess Venus.
Ooh, fun. Yeah.
I also am going to cover Aphrodite.
Mm.
They are, I guess, I want to say one and the same, but not.
Yeah.
Some things differ.
I gotcha.
Pretty much the same. But we're going to talk about her too. But Venus was the Roman goddess of love, sex, beauty, and fertility.
Period.
Like I said, her counterpart was the Greek goddess of Aphrodite. And she was promiscuous. So not only did Venus have divine lovers, she also had mortal lovers. So her divine lovers, she had two. One was her husband, Vulcan, and Mars, or Aries.
Oh.
That story, it talks about Vulcan and Venus had like a loveless marriage and had no children. And about Venus and Mars' love affair. And then Vulcan cunningly trapped them in a bed with a net.
Can I pause you for 2 seconds and ask a really stupid question? Did we name the planets after them, or did the planets get named after the gods?
I think the planets got named after the gods.
Okay, that's all.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a very
just a silly question that I feel like I never knew the answer to.
Yeah. Although being the goddess of love and sex was not barren, she did have a ton of kids. I'm going to actually do that over again.
Okay.
So even though Vulcan and Venus didn't have any children, her being the goddess of love and sex, she had many children from different gods. She had children with Mars, where she gave birth to Timor, his twin Metis, Concordia, and Cupid, or Eros.
Eros.
Eros. Wasn't that Eros? That's not Game of Thrones, no.
It might be. It is something.
It's something. It's definitely a name somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Venus also had several mortal lovers as well. Her two most famous would be Anchises and Adonis. So Venus fell in love with Adonis. It said either because of his beauty or from Cupid's arrow. And she ended up having Proserpina care for him until she could come for Adonis. But the two goddesses both grew enamored with him, and they ended up fighting until Zeus decided that Adonis would spend a third of the year with each of them. And then a third whatever he wanted to do.
Oh, how nice.
So he got his time.
That is so funny.
But he ultimately spent his time with Venus until he was killed by a boar. Ooh. Yep.
I wonder if it was... That's so funny. I wonder if it was Freya's boar.
Freya's boar.
It might have been Freya's boar.
Could have been.
That's so funny.
According to Homeric hymn to Aphrodite, like I said, kind of pretty much interchangeable.
Mm-hmm.
Anchises, and I know I'm butchering that, was a prince from Dardania, an ally to Troy.
Ally.
And he was seduced by Venus as she disguised herself as a Phrygian princess.
Slay.
And then it was only 9 months later she revealed her divine identity. She presented him with their son, Aeneas. And then Venus warned Anchises never to like brag about their affair, or he would be struck down by Jupiter.
Oh.
And he did exactly that.
Period.
And then was crippled by Jupiter's bolt.
Can't say the bitch didn't warn you.
No. She warned you.
She warned you.
So, Venus also has some temples. And I kept finding, I kept finding these things about, like, cults.
Oh.
I'm assuming they're following.
Yeah.
And she also has a festival in ancient Rome. Now, her first appearance of, like, a temple was in 295 BCE.
Wow.
And it was Venus Obsequies.
Sure.
It pretty much just says obedient Venus. On It's on the Aventine Hill. This temple was diffused with the Greek aspects and wasn't a new creation. So it wasn't like it was built for Venus. So it kind of has Aphrodite cult too.
Gotcha. Following.
Yeah. And then in 217 BCE, the Cybeline Oracle suggests that if Rome could persuade Venus to change her allegiance from the Carthaginian Sicilian allies to the Romans, the war would be won. Well, Rome laid siege to Eryx, offered the goddess a magnificent temple, and took her back to Rome. It was this foreign image that eventually became Rome's Venus the Mother. It's a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Venus is like my, like the long one. Venus's month was April.
I knew that.
And it was the beginning of spring and fertility.
I also knew that.
Look at you go. Mm-hmm. How about that?
Mm-hmm.
that's when most of her festivals were going to be held. April 1st, there was a festival that was held in her honor of Venus Verticordia.
Isn't April... April 1st is April Fool's, isn't it?
No.
I hate you. I hate you literally so much. It was so annoying. Like, shut up.
I got a laugh out of it. So then on the 23rd of April, Vinala Urbana was held, which was a wine festival belonging to both Venus, the goddess of profane wine, and Jupiter. She also became goddess of wine.
Love.
Yeah.
Shit, if I'm going to be the goddess of anything, let it be wine.
Yeah, right? Then there was another festival held on August 10th.
Oh, right near my birthday.
That was Venus's oldest festival, and it was associated with her form as Venus, like, obsequies.
Mm.
She also has one, like I said. She just goes on forever.
We love to celebrate her.
Yeah, she just gets celebrated all the time. September 26th. Was the date for the festival of Venus Gentrix, which is Venus the Mother and the protector of Rome. Now, as we've gotten through all of that with Venus and all of those terrible pronunciations and names, we're just going to keep on going.
Keep on going.
Yep. Keep on struggling. So as you can imagine, though, images of Venus have been found in countless forms. She had sculptures, mosaics, shrines, domestic murals. Due to her natural beauty and sexual nature, she was often depicted nude.
Shocker.
If somebody was shocked by that, I'd
kind of... Literally.
I mean, these are Valentine's Day gods. Somebody says, somebody says Cupid, I instantly am like...
Naked baby.
Naked baby.
Yeah.
Most of the sculptures of Venus... They resemble a close similarity to Aphrodite.
Aphrodite.
However, there's many wall paintings from Pompeii that depict Venus in different forms. And then Venus is still a popular subject of matter for artists from that time through the Renaissance. And into the 20th century. Yeah. So, like, she's still a big thing.
For sure.
Yeah. I think we went to Italy over the summer, so we saw Pompeii.
Which is just insane to me. Like, I love that.
What, that?
That you guys went to Italy.
Like, yeah. It's crazy.
Oh, yeah. It was definitely awesome. Somewhere that I need to go.
Let me tell you. Allergies, gone.
Yeah.
Gone. Didn't have them.
God, that and the food. I feel like the food over there would cure me.
The food is, yeah. I mean.
And all the history, like as corny and like, loserish as that sounds, like, no, the history and like the architecture of like that place is insane.
They're worried that that volcano, I should know the name, I was there, but that volcano is getting active again.
Oh no.
They're worried that it's going to blow and they're going to lose all the rest of the stuff that's at Pompeii.
Volcanoes are scary. I mean, obviously, but right. like such a crazy concept that that's a thing that happens.
Yeah. It's, I mean, going there was crazy to see. It was awesome. If you ever get a chance, go.
For sure.
And then the wine. And like you said, the food. Oh, their wine.
Whew. Yeah.
American wine does not.
Does not compare.
No. No.
I know. I want pizza in Italy so bad.
Well, did you know?
Did you know?
If you order a plain pizza over there, you're going to get a margarita style.
Like a margarita pizza. And they also like don't cut them. Don't you have to like cut them yourself at some places?
Yeah. You get it as a pizza.
Yeah, they give you like scissors or like whatever, and you like cut it. I think that's
so
sick.
We didn't get scissors. Did they cut ours? I can't remember if it was cut. You get like a personal pie.
Yeah.
You don't get like large pizzas. Yeah. It's just like one pie.
Crazy.
and it's the best. I won't touch margarita pizza here anymore.
Oh, I don't blame you. Once you have it over there, are you kidding?
It's so fresh. It's so good. It's insane. And it was hard as hell to try and order french fries.
Yeah. Language barrier is definitely something.
Yes. Yeah.
You have to factor in.
And we went to like a small mom pop pizza shop in Naples.
Yeah. Which is just crazy. Just, you know, casually in Naples. No biggie.
Yeah. Hey, we waited a long time to get there.
Oh, so yeah.
It was worth it.
Well deserved.
Yeah. I believe it's kicked over to you now.
Oh, is this thing coming to me?
Yeah, it's coming over to you.
Coming to me? Oh, right. Well, I know that Nick mentioned both of these, actually, in his little spiel. So I'm going to go into depth a little bit more.
Talk about a spiel.
Because we can't talk about Valentine's Day gods. And obviously, you have to talk about Cupid. You can't talk about... You have to.
Yep.
So fun fact, Eros and Cupid are kind of... It's kind of like a Aphrodite...
Venus.
Yes. Hello. I was going to get there. Venus situation. Like they kind of coincide as one another. So Eros was the Greek god of love, or more precisely, passionate and physical desire. Without warning, Eros selects his targets and forcefully strikes at their hearts, bringing confusion and irrepressible feelings.
I didn't know he struck the heart.
Where the heck did you think Cupid had to hit you, Nick?
I don't know, you know.
Oh my God, be so for real. I know you're lying. No, you had
I'm
to know.
I'm thinking of...
Cupid had a heart. It's literally a song.
But I mean, I was thinking of the Santa Claus. For whatever reason, I pictured that Cupid.
Okay.
They never show you where he shoots anybody, but I just assume...
Actually, yeah, now that I'm thinking about it, sometimes I feel like every time I've seen...
Have you heard that? I just like... threw my mic across the table.
Every time I've seen Cupid, like in Disney shows, like when Cupid would be in them, they would always shoot you in the butt.
Yeah.
Like you just get shot in the butt. So I guess you're onto something there.
In case everybody didn't realize, I don't study this stuff. Learned about it in high school, maybe eighth grade.
I don't think I ever learned about this stuff in school. Well, so yeah, he shoots you in the heart, strikes you in the heart, bringing confusion. In the words of Hesiod, he, quote, loosens the limbs and weakens the mind. Sounds about right.
Yeah.
Eros is most often represented in Greek art as a carefree and beautiful youth, crowned with flowers, especially of roses. Roses are a common theme with them. I keep wanting to say him, but then I say them because I feel like I'm talking about two people. You guys get what I'm saying. Eros and Psyche. Am I saying that right? S is not even the first letter. It's P. P-S-Y-C-H-E. Is that Psyche or Psyche?
I think it's Psyche.
Psyche.
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay.
I mean, tell me. I'll let us know.
Yeah, somebody will tell me I'm wrong. Because when I looked it up, it just... kept telling me what it's like.
I appreciate being told that we were wrong.
Yeah, honestly, I'll take it.
Make sure we're better.
All right, sorry about that cutting that you're going to have to do there. I'm back. Okay. Eros and Psyche are a common pairing in the sculpture of ancient Greece and Rome. According to Hesiod in his Theogony, going with like theory, it's like the same thing. Eros was one of the primeval gods who, along with Chaos and Gaia, who was Earth, was responsible for the creation. Here, he perhaps represented a universal type of love. So, in other traditions, such as the Orphic cosmogonies, Eros is born a hermaphrodite from an egg, which was put by the Titan Kronos, who represents time, into the womb of Chaos, which is just wild.
Okay.
The Greek comic playwright Aristophanes, which was around 380 BCE, we're talking, like, this is our timeline. I couldn't tell you when that was because I don't know, but far back. That uses the same idea, but has Eros hatch out from a silver egg that was laid by a nymph. Yet more alternatives for the mother of this highly desirable love child are, bear with me, Eliothelia.
That's like Julia Gulia.
Yeah, literally sounds fake. Like, those are letters that should not be next to each other. But that was the god of protecting childbirth. Penia, who was the protector, like the god of poverty, and Eris, who was the messenger goddess and west wind. More commonly than all of these other versions, though, Eros was regarded as the winged acolyte or assistant of Aphrodite, goddess of love, beauty, and desire. He was also sometimes regarded as the child of Aphrodite, with Ares, the god of war, as his father. And his brothers were, if you're going with this definition, his brothers were Deimos, who is fear, Phobos, who is panic, and Harmonia, who is harmony. Fear, panic, and harmony.
Yep.
I'm not sure I'm naming my children after the... Harmony is fine. Harmony is a great name. Fear and panic?
Mm.
I feel like you're setting yourself up with that one.
Yeah.
So that's in some traditions. That's believed his family tree. Eros also had a younger brother, Anteros, who was a much darker figure and an avenger of unrequited love. Never heard that one before.
No.
Like, never heard that version of it. That would be crazy if, like, Eros and Cupid had a little brother running around that was dark.
Yeah.
And, like, the complete opposite.
Well, where there's light, there's dark. Isn't that how it goes? Yin yang.
Yeah. Literally, that's how it goes.
Probably didn't do that right either, but.
Anyway.
Yeah. Makes sense. One side's white, one side's dark.
In the Greek myth, Eros was associated above all with fertility, desire, and sexual love, and because such passions could prove very difficult to control, the god was considered something of like a trickster, like kind of like cunning, a trickster, like that type of thing. That's where he gets the whole, like when you think of Cupid, you're thinking like, he's kind of mischievous.
Yeah.
Like I think of like that little baby running around that's like mysterious.
Yeah. Trickster is a good way to put it.
Yeah. Sometimes the god is playful and harmlessly mischievous, but at other times he is cruel with his surprise attacks that only bring reckless passion and confusion. Because, like, that's the other side of it. Like, yeah, Cupid's all fun and lovey-dovey, like, makes people fall in love, but, like, shit, what if you get shot in the heart and, like, you already got, like, 5 kids in a marriage and, like, now you're in love with somebody else? It's messy.
That is
messy.
Definitely messy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It should be, like, off limits.
Yeah, well, the lack of discipline and general unreliability of Eros may explain why he was never considered one of the 12 Olympian gods.
Makes sense.
Yeah, so if you were ever wondering why he wasn't considered for one of those, that's why. He was irresponsible.
Yeah, he can't take it serious. He'd probably cheat.
Literally.
Cheater.
Literally.
Yeah.
Finally, which I did not know this, Eros was highly considered the specific protector of homosexual love.
Hmm.
Did not know that.
That's interesting, yeah.
Never heard that. Absolutely love.
Yeah.
Never heard that. Now I'm just going to like kind of touch on like the arrows that they'd be using a little bit. It was thought that Eros arrows, often randomly aimed, made people, heroes, and gods fall in love and no one was immune. Like, if you're a god, don't care. Doesn't the arrows. Matter, yeah. Nope. Doesn't care.
Well, he shot, you know, it said they shot Venus.
Uh-huh.
Venus fell in love with, who was that? I can't think of his name now. I'd have to scroll all the way up.
Well, I'm going to give you an example of him using his little trickster powers.
Adonis.
One of the most famous episodes involving this trick was when Apollo ridiculed the skills of Eros as an archer. And so then he fired one of his arrows at Apollo, making him fall in love with a nymph named Daphne, but then launched a leaden arrow at Daphne so that she would be repulsed by him.
Wow.
So, like, that is, like, pure just, like, evil. Like, yeah. I'm going to make you fall in love with her, and then I'm going to make sure she never falls in love with you. Crazy. Yep.
Trickster.
Calculated.
But, yeah.
I mean, valid.
Revenge.
Sure. I totally agree. But I read that, and I was like, wow. Messy. Like, this diva. Another such instance of Eros using his love-carrying arrows was when he made Medea fall in love with the great hero, Jason. I'm not even kidding. That's what it, Jason. We've got all these crazy, wild names, and Medea falls in love with Jason. He was the one who grabbed the golden fleece. Eros was not himself immune to the powers of love, and he famously fell for and married Psyche against the wishes of his mother, Aphrodite.
Hmm.
Crazy, right?
Yeah.
He's not even immune. He's like, I love who I love, and you can't tell me anything, Mom.
No.
In ancient Greek art from the 6th century BCE, Eros is usually seen as an adolescent with wings, and he often carries a wreath of victory. He may also hold onto a lyre, a hare, or a whip. You know, surprisingly, he is only, like, drawn carrying a bow with any great frequency from the 4th century BCE is the, like, earliest it dates back to him with an arrow. The first literary reference is much earlier. I don't know why they didn't start drawing him with his arrow until then, but that's when that started. Sorry. Eros usually appears at weddings and other romantic scenes, often hovering above the main protagonist. Athletic and military scenes may include the god as well. Like, he just be everywhere. He regularly features in scenes of Aphrodite's birth and the creation of Pandora, who is the first woman in Greek mythology. However, in another analogy, Cupid's mother became so jealous of the beautiful Psyche that she told her son to induce Psyche to fall in love with the monster, and instead Cupid became so enamored with Psyche that he married her with the condition that she could never see his face. Eventually, her curiosity got the better of her and she stole a glance, causing Cupid to flee in anger. And I only included that because I vividly remember reading something, or it was in, like, some show or something I watched, where, like, Cupid was very specific about, like, you can't see his face. And I was like, I know there's a reason for that. That was the reason. In the poetry of the Archaic period, Eros was represented as a subtly immoral who was irresistible to both men and gods. So, both. He's just irresistible. But by the Hellenistic period, he was increasingly portrayed as a playful, mysterious child because of his associations with love. 19th century Victorians credited with popularizing Valentine's Day and giving the holiday its romantic spin became, like, creating this chubby version of Cupid on Valentine's Day cards, in a trend that has obviously persisted to this day. So it is only, like, later in Roman art that Eros was under the new name Cupid. So, like, up until, like, very, very, like, late Roman times did we start referring to him as Cupid.
Did not know that.
Yeah. And that is Cupid and Eros and all of their Valentine's Day lore.
Well, my next god, is another god from Greek mythology. This is Pothos. He was a love god who was worshipped as part of the advisors or assistants to Aphrodite. So, what they say, she was the god of sexual longing, yearning, and desire, kind of like Cupid and Eros.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. He was one of the winged love gods known as Eros. Right? I was sitting here, I was like, wait, you're talking about all this stuff that I just
read
talked about.
And
yeah.
talked about.
But it doesn't say he was Aphrodite's like kid or anything. He was a like assistant or something. Yeah.
This is where I was there like, we're gonna run into something.
Yeah. It completely gets like crisscrossed applesauced. In the late classical writers describe him as a son of Zephyros, the west wind, and Iris, the rainbow.
Aww.
Representing the variegated passion of love. So, the last little bit I kind of have on him, which is, this is what's kind of interesting because now there's three. So it says the three Erotes, Pothos, Himeros, and Eros, were often depicted together on like Greek base paintings, which I guess kind of makes sense. Like there's, when you see like, I guess old paintings of them, there's always like two or three of them.
I always think of like three like sculptors.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like the old like sculpted like things. Like,
yeah.
That's what I think
and then
of.
Night at the Museum, I think it's Battle of Smithsonian. Mm-hmm. The Cupids are running around. They're great.
Such good movies.
Yeah. I love Ben Stiller, but those movies were great. And there was little Cupids in there. I'm pretty sure there was like three of them. And if I'm not mistaken, they definitely, I think, were played by, like, I want to say NSYNC, but it's not that. I'm pretty sure it was like a boy band now, I think. At least for singing. But anyway, that was all I had on Pothos. He's also a plant.
Love.
Yeah, I tried researching. I typed in Pothos.
The first thing that came up was a plant.
It was just all plants. It's the, like, viney plant with
the spade
looking leaf.
You're
going to
need to be more specific.
Yeah. Oh, that's it? You're out?
That's it. That's all I got.
Oh, I forgot.
That's all I got. All
right, well.
Wrap it up.
I guess
up,
that
Mr.
means I'm wrapping this up.
Take us home.
Yeah, we're going to take this home with Aphrodite.
Mm-hmm.
There's not much to be said that's different between like her and Venus. Her name comes from the Greek word aphros.
I do just think
foam.
Aphrodite is just such a fun thing to say.
Yeah.
Like whoever came up with that, mm-hmm. like kudos to you.
We also have a friend who is from Greece. So
really?
I guess that makes her Greek.
Duh.
Yeah.
That's how that works.
And she's probably going to kill me for
literally
mispronouncing these.
Uh-huh.
I should have. Why didn't I reach out to her? Idiot. Anyway, her name means foam.
Foam? Okay.
Yeah. Because she apparently was born. This is interesting. She was born from white foam that was produced by the seared genitalia of Uranus after his son, Cronus, threw them into the sea.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Sure. Yep. Love it.
So, most everybody knows her. Greek goddess of sexual love and beauty. She was also worshipped as a goddess of sea and seafaring. But I also found that she wasn't just that. In Sparta. Thebes, and Cyprus, she was also honored as the goddess of war. That was pretty interesting. Some believe her worship came to Greece from the east, as many of her like attributes recall like Middle Eastern goddess Ishtar and Astarte. Homer says that she's the daughter of Zeus and Dione. In the book The Odyssey, one of the versions, she was mismatched with Thais. And she consequently spent her time philandering with the handsome god of war, Ares, which kind of fits the same story as Venus.
Yeah.
Of this, she becomes the mother to Harmonia, the warrior twins, Phobos and Deimos, Eros, the god of love, which all the same pretty much as Venus. Sound the same, names are a little different. So for her, her most important mortal lovers were the Trojan Shepherd. Oh, duh. She had the same mortal lovers as Venus, the Antinous and Adonis. It was the same thing. Adonis was still killed by a boar, so that story didn't change.
Killed by Freya's boar. In my head, that's canon. That's what happened.
On the Greek mainland, Corinth was the chief chief center of worship. Representations, though, of Aphrodite in like early Greek art, are fully dressed and don't have any like distinguishing features that like separate her from other goddesses, which is much different than Venus.
Mm.
She first attained her individuality at the hands of the great 5th century BCE sculptors. So they kind of gave her individuality. The most famous of all the statues of Aphrodite was carved by boy.
Good luck.
Yeah. Praxiteles?
Mm-hmm.
For the Canadians. I almost want to say Canadians, but it's so close.
Gosh, Aphrodite is so pretty. Like, you literally just, like, look up her name and the things that come up. Just, like, glorious. Like,
yeah.
Obviously, but...
That was apparently the first scale, full-scale female nude. And it became the model for such masterpieces as the Venus de Milo.
It is beautiful.
Yeah.
I'm looking on it.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much... That's Aphrodite. They run her, Venus, they all kind of intertwine.
Yeah. Know?
Goddesses of love are all pretty close. They're pretty much all similar. Some names change depending Greek to Roman. Heck, Athos somehow becomes Eros.
Eros and Cupid are apparently also coincide.
Yeah, you know, we definitely tried to separate things and in the beginning, you're like, oh, yeah, like, this is good. I know Venus. I know Aphrodite. Mm-hmm. And then you start looking up and you're like, oh, I know them because they're practically the same.
Right. There's so much all of them.
So we kind of hit the common love goddesses, a couple love gods. And then we also had, like, Hathor and Freya, which are kind of, I don't want to say unpopular.
Yeah, people know them, lesser known.
They were lesser known to us.
Yeah.
And hopefully, you know, we kind of didn't like bore the heck out of you with going through the Venus and Aphrodite and stuff like that. And we hope that you guys are going to keep listening and that you guys go follow us on Instagram at
Ominous Archives.
On X.
Ominous Archives.
And if you want to reach out, correct us some, whatever, you could email us at
ominousarchives@gmail.com.
Well, that is going to wrap up the Valentine's Day special.
It is.
Crazy. You doing anything for Valentine's Day? Anything for the night?
Nothing crazy.
No?
No. Oh, Yellow Jackets comes out. My show.
So you're going to watch that?
Yes, I'm watching Yellow Jackets, the first two episodes. I literally cannot recommend this show enough. You have to have a big stomach for it. But if you can stomach it, great show. If I can watch it, the average person can watch it. I highly suggest it. And if you're listening to this podcast, I feel like it's something that you would definitely enjoy. So That's my Valentine's Day plans.
Okay.
How about you?
I don't think we're doing anything. We're keeping it low key.
Yeah.
Got a couple special gifts and stuff like that, but nothing too crazy.
Well, we hope you guys all have a wonderful Valentine's Day. Thank you for listening to us on this Valentine's Day.
You can check back with us next Friday, where we'll be back to the normal. I think we're going to get on out of here.
See ya.
See ya.